is the New York State AFERD podcast entitled A through Z, Health and PE. We are your co-hosts, Drs. C and C, the true Pan-American connection. I am Clancy Seymour, and my tag team partner is the one and only Dr. Victor Ramsey.
Details highlighting our episodes, guests, contact information, publications, and other useful resources will always be included in the podcast show notes. For more information about New York State AFERD, please visit newyorkstateaford.org or Facebook and social media handles at New York State AFERD. Let's embrace the journey, and now on to our show.
Greetings, listeners. I'm Dr. Clancy Seymour with my co-host, Dr. Victor Ramsey. Doc, how are you today?
I am doing well down here in Brooklyn, New York. Greetings to all of you, our amazing students and panelists, and the weather, as always, is beautiful. So hello from Brooklyn, and thanks to you. Thank you for having me here today.
Awesome, Dr.
Always Ramsey. Nice to spend time with you.
Yes, indeed. And so for some context for our listeners, we'll release this podcast perhaps a little bit later in the summer, towards the middle of July or something like that. But right now we're on June 15th, coming up on the Father's Day weekend. You know, just to give some context for our listeners. So welcome to the New York State AFERD A through Z Health and PE podcast. This is the final episode of our summer series, where we've invited special guests and students from some courses I teach at Canisius, soon to be university, over the summer. So students in these classes are graduate teacher candidates on the verge of student teaching, newly inducted teachers into the profession, and some experienced health and physical education professionals, practitioners. We've asked special guests and students to review articles ahead of time and discuss accordingly. The article we will be chatting about today is entitled Grading in Physical Education, published in the Journal of Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance in 2018 by Dr. Elisa James. Very exciting. So therefore, and in addition to Dr. Ramsey and the graduate students, I am truly honored to introduce our special guest for today's episode, my dear friend and mentor, Dr. Elisa James. How are you? Would you like to say hello to our listeners?
I'm doing fine. Hello, everyone. Thank you, Clancy and Victor, for letting me spend this time and with your students. Thank you all for this time. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. We're really grateful to have you. Dr. James is a professor and associate dean at SUNY Brockport. Dr. James has been at SUNY Brockport for 22 years. She is the past president of New York State AFERD, as well as a past president of the Future Professional section and the Higher Education section as well. So we've had a chance to review the articles, and now we move on. Dr. Ramsey, take it away.
Yes, indeed. Dr. James, we have some questions for you. And by we, I mean not only myself and my co-host, but clearly our students. So I'd like to start off by asking you, assessment, it's not a four-letter word, but it's viewed by many in the RPE profession as such. We would like for you to explain and expand on that for us. Thank you.
I mean, that's a really interesting question, and it's never really been presented to me in that way, but it is an interesting way to look at it. I think that there's a lot of reasons that with assessment, practitioners might consider it a four-letter word. I mean, there are barriers to assessment, class size, facilities, equipment, student perceptions. I mean, you know, students sometimes perceive there's nothing to learn in physical education. So why are we being assessed? Administration. I've encountered some administrators in some school districts who basically will say, we're not going to assess in physical education, or if we do, it's based on participation, showing up, being prepared, and those types of things. I think too that the other thing that happens why it's considered a four-letter word or can be considered is that in a lot of ways, people get their jobs, they start teaching in physical education, and they are socialized. You're either socialized in a way that you value assessment and you utilize assessment, it's really valued by your district, or it's not valued and it's not utilized. So I think that those barriers and those perceptions of assessment and perception of assessment and physical education overall contribute to that idea of that it could be considered a four-letter word.
Well said, Dr. James, indeed. And, you know, the question is a little bit certainly tongue-in-cheek, but it does speak to the challenges that we face when we think about the discipline. And ultimately, there's a lot of challenges when we, systemic challenges about time and resources. But, and then when you add the equation in that we want to be considered equals in other, like other disciplines, and that we have to assess learning, that's why you start to come across some of these questions regarding its potential four-letter word analogy. So with that, we have Max with a question. Max, why don't you go ahead and ask your question and introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yes, thanks for having me on your podcast today. My name is Max Young. I'm a secondary teacher here at Addison High School. For the last 9 years, I've been at a private school teaching health and phys ed. Now I teach grades 8 through 12. My question I had to you, Dr. James, as a former student of yours. So this is one of my first experiences teaching in a bigger department. I've been teaching more so on my own. When it comes to decide, I was reading through your article and it linking grades to our assessments. My question is, when others within your department don't assess and assign grades in the same way you do, what would you recommend?
I think that there's a few things that I would say to you. One is, does your department have a policy or philosophy in terms of grading, in terms of how the department and the district wants physical education grading to take place? Does that exist?
So in the past, it's been a program where there was a true department head, and now this is the first year where we're under a new umbrella where we have a teacher on a special assignment, where now it's not just phys ed, but we have a teacher that's in charge of not just PE, but in charge of science, in charge of other, and isn't really specialized in PE. So a lot of the things we've kind of ended up with it so that the high school is doing one form of grading, the middle school is doing one form, and then the elementary. So it's me and my teaching partner in the high school, we work really well together. Our assessments are aligned, but what we do is very different than what the middle school does. So I didn't know if I could get some help with that.
I think the one thing I would suggest that you do is to have a meeting with that teacher on special assignment and express your concerns, and particularly because physical education is not their discipline, and maybe even offer up the idea of maybe it would be a great idea if the high school physical education teachers and the middle school physical education teachers got together and you started having discussions and talking about assessment and grading, and you know, grading is just a mark, you know, it's a mark to show an evaluation basically. But the assessments that are utilized to come up with that grade, and in terms of progression, you know, you don't want to do, I always joke about SSDY, same stuff, different year. What are they teaching in the middle school? What are they assessing in the learning school, in the middle school? You know, what are the learning outcomes in the middle school? Are you just repeating the same curricular items in the high school? And even starting to have those conversations and how that impacts assessment. And when you think about student perceptions of assessment, if they've been doing same stuff, different year, and they're seniors, and this is the sixth year they've done bump, set, spike, they're not going to be really that motivated. So I would really suggest you speak to the teacher on special assignment and offer the idea, can we all get together and just have conversations, maybe on superintendent days, professional development days. And you have to work with your colleagues to develop that progression and that articulation, not only of curriculum, but of assessments that lead to the learning outcomes at the middle school level that should build and lead to learning outcomes at the high school level. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
I agree. Great advice, Max. And often when we're dealing with these challenges of socialization, the beginning steps that I always provide to teacher candidates or to those in the trenches like all of you is you can't do much about your colleagues until you get it the way you want to in your setting. So you have to start small, get it working the way you want to the point that you gain momentum and traction that others see what you're doing and say, hey, I want to give that a shot. You know, so I think that's great advice that Dr. James provides. So I think Rich has a question next. It's very specific to elementary, but hopefully Dr. James can elaborate a little bit. Rich, go ahead and introduce yourself to the group.
Hi, Dr. James. My name is Richard Cruz. I'm a K-6 elementary school teacher in New Jersey. So our state standards are a little bit different than New York, but they relatively line up with each other. So at my school, we currently have only two grading factors. It is participation and readiness. And so we struggle with communicating with our administrators that this is not the direction we should be moving towards, or we want to move in a positive direction. So have you heard, or how do you address those concerns with my administrators in trying to fix and solve those problems?
Well, there's a couple of things. My one question, do you belong to New Jersey AFERD?
Yes.
Okay. So I know a lot of the people involved in New Jersey AFERD, they do advocacy with districts and will contact administrators and things like that. So one thing I would suggest that you do is to maybe reach out to the New Jersey AFERD and ask them for maybe some talking points to talk to your, when we're talking about your administrators, are we talking about your building principal?
Yeah, building principal, definitely athletic director.
Okay. So in New Jersey, in New York, we have a director of health and physical education, and then you can have athletic directors that are not certified PE teachers. But in New Jersey, do you just have athletic directors?
Yeah, it's just an athletic director.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think you could have conversations with, you know, utilizing those talking points. And again, to be your own advocate, to go in and meet with your building principal, to meet with your athletic director, and just have these conversations with them and talk to them about, you know, get their perception of why is it that we only utilize these two factors for grading? Why are we only grading on participation and being prepared? Get their perception. And then I would really, you know, talk to them and show them the New Jersey learning standards. And these are the knowledges and skills that your elementary students should be receiving. And we're not assessing that. We are not assessing student learning at all, let alone the quality of student learning, but we're not assessing it at all. And I think really that if you can get some talking points from New Jersey AFERD and you can put together how the assessments tie into the standards that they're supposed to be reaching, and then the national standards as well, you know, I would bring all that together, because in my experience with administrators, I was an elementary physical education teacher in Cincinnati, Ohio for quite a few years. And I had to spend a lot of time. I had a great principal, but I had to spend a lot of time talking about, you know, what my students were learning and educating them in terms of what physical education should be. And it was always interesting, because when they came in to observe, it was like, oh, that was a great class. Everybody was listening. They were paying attention. Nobody was off task, but I had to really explain, well, this is what I was teaching. These were my learning objectives. This is what I wanted students to learn. What did you think of that? And so I actually had to work with my building principal to help them kind of reframe observations to actually help them see what they were supposed to be seeing in my class. And so going back to assessment and grading, I think that there's a lot of really good resources out there on the Shape America website in terms of advocacy, but I would really tap into New Jersey AFERD and to get some talking points and meet with your principal and your athletic director and have these conversations. And I think that that will help kind of pave the way to maybe widening their worldview regarding what grading could be and how it helps students really know where they are and parents really know where their students are in terms of developing those skills and knowledge that are necessary to become a physically literate individual. So that would be my advice to you.
Thank you so much.
Wow. You know, when you think you know somebody, Dr. James, elementary physical educator in Cincinnati, oh my goodness, that is unbelievable. That's amazing. Thank you so much for your response. And Richard, I know that you are going to put that in your toolbox and take that on. So thank you so much for sharing that. So prior to our podcast, we were talking about conundrum around assessments and the various challenges that people face, Dr. James, with regard to assessment. Could you share with our listening audience a brief overview of the different types of assessment that practitioners may learn about and may need to know?
Sure. And assessment, there's a lot of words, a lot of terminology that's out there with assessment. But I always start with formative and summative assessment. And formative, I always would tell my students, like, it's assessment for learning. For, the letter four is in the word formative. And then summative is assessment of learning. And so it's really important that we understand that, you know, when you're determining a grade, however you determine or get to your grade, it should be based particularly on those assessments. And the book that you showed early on that I wrote several years ago, I talk about an assessment plan, you know, and so you need to know like what your formative assessments are and what your summative assessments are. And then you develop your grading plan from your assessment plan. But then you also have formal and informal assessment. Formal assessment is really removed from real life skills tests. And I'm dating myself, but way back when I was an undergrad, Shape America was called the American Alliance for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance, AFERD. And they had AFERD skill tests that were standardized. They were in a book. And I remember doing like the volleyball set skill test, and it was against the wall. And I remember the person next to me in college, we were doing an assessment class, was shorter than me. And I asked the question, am I going to get a better score? Because I'm taller and the ball doesn't have to fall as far. And my professor was like, no, this skill test is valid and reliable. And I remember questioning it. And it wasn't a matter of I was better at setting a volleyball against the wall. It just didn't have to fall as far. And so with those formal ones, you can't really generalize it to other contexts. So when you think about it, in a volleyball match, you never set against the wall. So why would we assess out of context of the game or out of the context of how we would do it? But those still exist. You know, there are those formal assessments. Informal assessments are assessments that are integrated into the learning process to promote student learning. So these, you know, authentic assessments, alternative assessments, they use a lot of different terms, but things like checklists, rating scales, and rubrics, those are the types of, you know, assessments that our practitioners are using. You know, the fitness gram, I would consider that more of, you know, a formal assessment, one that, you know, when you do the fitness gram, it measures, you know, your, let's just, cardiovascular endurance, you know, doing the pacer, but it doesn't measure your cardiovascular endurance if you were cycling or something like that. So I would look at that as more of a formal type of an assessment, fitness gram. Good assessment, but it can't be generalized to other contexts. It's just for that pacer test type thing.
Wow, well great, stated.
Great stuff, wow. Dr. James.
Yeah.
And You got it. You certainly started to talk about alternatives and authentic assessments and, you know, different ways to think about assessment and mention some of those. But, you know, that juxtaposed against some of the traditional practices utilized in PE that we face, grading on managerial items as opposed to anything that relates to learning and growth in physical education. Do you want to quickly chat about that?
Sure. I think that you know, historically, because there are so many reasons and barriers to assessment, that a lot of people have just assessed based on participation, dress, being prepared, being on time. And I think that has hurt us as a profession profoundly, because I always think about, you know, I struggled in geometry my sophomore year of high school, but if all I had to do was show up in geometry with my, you know, my protractor and everything I needed to do geometry just to be prepared and got an A just because I had what I needed, you know, for geometry, that would have been awesome with me because I really struggled. And I think that there are a lot of problems in terms of grading on those managerial aspects, and it creates bigger problems for the profession. I know that, you know, parents get really upset if their child doesn't, you know, like when I taught in elementary PE, they were ESU. And then my, I don't know, so many years in, we changed third through sixth grade to a letter grade. And I'll never forget that. I had parents who, when their child got S's in physical education, they were fine. If they got a U, they weren't happy. But if they would get an S and I gave them a C, parents got really upset. And they would say, how can my child get a C in physical education? They're there. They have their shoes on. You know, they're on time. And so it, you know, and it made me really start to think about, you know, there are average students in every subject area in a school. And so us grading on managerial aspects has nothing to do with student learning. It marginalizes us as a profession even further. It makes it harder for us to be considered a valid subject in schools. And I think that one of the interesting things, Clance, you remember when we worked on that grading document for New York State AFERD? I'm going to give props to my colleague, Dr. Sherry Treadwell. Dr. Treadwell and I worked on a rubric that actually is part of that document that addresses the managerial aspects, because it was almost as if, okay, people are going to grade on the managerial aspects, but let's just make it this small part of the grade. And then the rest of the grade should be based on the degree that students met the learning outcomes and what students learned. And so I think that it's okay in some aspects if you utilize a rubric like Dr. Treadwell and I created that's part of that document that gets at some of those managerial things, but it's not a big piece of the grade. But then focusing on student learning and making the grade match your learning objectives and your learning outcomes, I think that's where we need to really be as a profession.
Well said. Dr. Ramsey?
Yes, we have some questions on deck. Would like for, in the same order, I believe that it was...
I think Scott's posted. Up next, yeah.
Scott, yes, please do. Introduce yourself, Scott, and then we'll follow up with, I believe, Brandon.
My name is Scott Morris. I've been teaching phys ed now for 20 years. I currently work in a public school in Tennessee. It's a K-5 elementary school. So my question is, how can we convince school districts that don't value phys ed as important as core subjects that assessing our students is not only as equal, but as an important part of the student's whole learning process?
Yeah.
I think that, you know, Scott, this is a great question. I've been at teaching physical education at some level, well, I have to do the math, 40 years, you know, 40, is that right? Yes. I can't do the math. 40, I think, is right. So it's been several years. And I have struggled with what you just asked, because I've tried, you know, lots of different ideas. I've talked to people, and I think that it really comes down to what, you know, the value that's placed on physical education and with a district. And if you're trying to convince people that we should assess for student learning, I really think that it's really important to be a part of your state association, your professional association. And I also think that it's really important that we as physical educators do the advocacy work. And I'm sure you've done a lot of that, and you've talked to your administrators and things like that. But also being able to go in and talk to other teachers in your building and helping them to understand, going out into your community, working with parents and talking to them. And I think it really comes down to that we need to be able to convince people that, you know, student learning and physical education is essential. And if we want to have physically literate individuals who continue to be physically active throughout their life, they have to be able to know and be able to do certain things. And if we never assess students, they don't know if they are doing things correctly. They don't know if they're good at something or if they can get better. We don't help them learn. And I think that in a lot of ways, that busy, happy, good that Judy Plasek wrote about in 1983 or something like that is still out there. And it's still what we're up and fighting against. And to me, one of the best things that, and Dr. Seymour alluded to this, being a role model, doing, following best practices as a PE teacher and being able to reach out and have other people see what you're doing. And I think that we just have to continue to do that. And I also think that if you can bring other colleagues on board, do you teach, are you the only teacher in your building?
The school I was at last year, there was two of us, and the school I'll be currently going to next year, there'll be three of us in there.
Okay. So, because the other thing is, if you can get those other two teachers on board with you and that you can go together and have those conversations, you know, with, you know, your building principal, your school board, parents, open house, you know, talk about how you assess and the importance of assessment and the importance of student learning and what their children are learning and how is that going to help them as they become adults. And I always would talk about, you know, you want them to be physically literate because not only for the health reasons, but for the physical health reasons, but for the mental health reasons. And the more people can engage in physical activity, it helps with their mental health. It helps with their physical health. It helps with their self-esteem. It helps with their academics. I mean, that information is all out there, helps with their attendance in school. And I think that I can't, as a parent and a grandparent, I want all that for my children. I want all that for my grandchildren. And I think that it's really important that if the three of you can, you know, be on the same page and have the same message and get it out to as many people as you can and start to change perspective, to start to change people's idea of what physical education is. And going back to when I would have parents be all upset because their child got a C, what I would do is I would bring the parent in and I would lay out all my assessments. And I would say, this is, and I did portfolios and I did different things. And I would say, this is your student's work. This is how they were assessed. And I'll never forget, this one parent looked at me and said, wow, physical education is not what it was when I was in school. And I think, and for me, that was just like a bell went off. And it made me think, that's the truth. I mean, so we have to change perspectives and perceptions. And I really believe working with parents makes a big difference, especially in an elementary building, because if they see that you're doing all these great things, they'll go to the administration and talk to the administration. So I would really suggest you consider doing that, getting your colleagues next year on the same page with you and having lay it out in terms of what you do in physical education, how you assess, why assessment's important, how does it help your students, and communicate that far and wide.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great advice, Dr. James. If I could just add a little bit to it, Scott, just because I'm asked the question a lot as well, and it's not an easy answer. And Dr. James articulated it beautifully. But it's going to take a little bit of growing pains for sure. And you, and her advice is well taken, because it starts with you, right? It's back to that. It starts with you. You have the data to support the decision, but you also need to make sure that you have the support of administration and explain to administration that it's going to be a tenuous process to get started and change the culture, because ultimately what we're trying to do is change the culture here. So that really speaks to that issue at hand. And by doing so and having those steps in place, I think you have a better opportunity to make that change. Now, when you're faced with an administration that are asking the same questions, this is exactly what Dr. James referred to. You use the resources that are available to explain that physical education is not busy, happy, good, 1983 Judy Plasek. It's much more different than that. Now, we have learning objectives. You can use the New York State AFERD CAGD2, the Curriculum Assessment Guidance Document for PE, second edition, and show an administrator, look at the learning objectives that are delineated here, not only in the physical, the psychomotor domain, but the cognitive and the affective domain. This is the learning that must take place in a sequential, progressive, developmentally appropriate K-12 physical education program. Say that three times. So you get my point. I think that's the way we have to start. And it's not going to be easy, but we have to change the culture. And that's where it starts.
Indeed. And if I may just add another piece, what I also heard Dr. James share was the notion of advocacy, advocating for our discipline in such a way that you are going to have to help to change minds and change what used to be the norm and start making those adjustments. So I just wanted to add the notion of advocacy for our discipline.
Well said, Dr. Ramsey. Always, it's our duty as physical education professionals to always remember that piece to advocate, because we face challenges indeed from a perceived mattering perspective. So I think Robert has a question next for Dr. James. Robert, introduce yourself, please.
I'm Robert Bice. I currently work in Northern New York. I am an athletic director at a local high school. However, my full-time job is working with people who are developmentally and intellectually disabled. My background is more in elementary education and moving more towards physical education. Since some time, I've been coaching for a while and moved in the athletic director role, and this has been pretty exciting for me. So my question is, it may be more of a teaching aspect. However, I look at the way students learn, and I look at the variety of the learning styles that students have. How would we incorporate that within physical education assessment?
I think that's a really good question. I think there's a couple of ways to look at it, because I didn't talk about peer assessment and self-assessment when Victor asked me to talk about different types of assessment. I think that, students learn in different ways. And I think that, utilizing peer and self-assessment might be a way to help students, like having a peer assessment where maybe we're working together and I'm trying to teach you, let's take elementary, I'm trying to teach you to throw overhand and overhead. And so I would work with you and I would give you feedback and I could show you. And sometimes, students that learn more from hearing or hearing and seeing. And so being able to work with a peer and being able to, have that peer provide them with feedback that might help them to learn. And then that peer doing an assessment of the other peer also helps them to learn. I also think that, there are ways, that you can modify assessment instruments like rubrics and things like that to take into account that one size doesn't fit all. And if you have a student with a developmental delay, they can be assessed using the same rubric, but it could be modified in a way. And I'm just thinking in terms of things that I did. If I had I'm just thinking I had a pair of pair of twins, twins in a class, and they were in the same class, and they both had developmental delays, and they were very different. Their delays were very different, but I still would utilize a rubric assessing whatever skill we were working on, but I adapted it. I changed it because I knew their developmental delays. And so I would utilize the same rubric, but I would make adjustments to account for those delays and that they did learn differently and that they needed a lot more prompting, a lot more, you know, feedback and things like that, which impacted my instruction as well. Because, you know, when you're instructing and you're teaching, your assessments should align with your learning activities and your objectives. So you don't teach all students in the exact same way. You're interacting with them differently and helping them in different ways to achieve the learning outcomes. So you can adjust your assessments to do the same thing, but you're still using a rubric. It just might be adjusted for those, whatever way they learn or whatever developmental delays they might have. So I'm a firm believer in that, you know, one size doesn't fit all. And I think that's one of the things that when you make an assessment, when you make a rubric, that you can actually build in to your levels, you know, descriptors to help modify the rubric for students who might have developmental delays or learn in a different way and things like that.
Great stuff. And I think Brandon's going to get into a question really specific to that. But one thing I would add as well is that, you know, in Robert's question, it's interesting because I started thinking about it from a different context, that from the larger picture, you mentioned SSDY, a quote I use from you often, same stuff, different year. And, you know, part of that is that multi-activity, traditional PE curriculum, sport-based skill and drill PE. And when we start to think about alternative models or second generation models like sport education or TPSR, or in my case, I love tactical games and game-based, those models are premised on a different way to present and deliver physical education that make assessment inherently different. And you mentioned peer assessment or self, that those types of pedagogical models allow for that those types of assessment to thrive and cultivate. And so I think that's another way to look at things, Robert, if that helps.
Yeah, that is awesome. Thank you so much. And before we go on to our next question, we do have Brandon. Again, your question, introduce yourself. And right after that would be Mia. Go ahead, my friends, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Brandon Hoth. I've been teaching in the Buffalo area for 4 years, been at my school for the last two. I've been teaching grades 7 through 12. Dr. James, great to see you. My question is, I've been teaching a lot of adapted classes in these last couple of years, and they're usually combined with general physical education classes. The majority of the time, they participate in the same activity. So when it comes to assessment for this, you kind of answered it in the last question, but should they be included in the same assessment? Should it be different and how? And then should they be scored the same?
I think that one thing I think about automatically, because they are included in the GPE class, is the use of universal design, right? And so the idea of if you're working on throwing, because throwing seems to be a theme with me today, having different things to throw, different sizes, different textures, different types of balls and things that you're going to throw. And so I think that, you know, the notion of with assessment in the sense that they should participate in the assessments with everybody else. They shouldn't be pulled to the side or say sit down, you don't have to do this. We don't do those things. But utilizing universal design and allowing them allowing you as the instructor and allowing them as well to be able to modify the task utilizing universal design, whether it's equipment, whether it's the height of your nets, your courts, are they wide and narrow, or, you know, those types of things. to help them participate in the activity and then be assessed with everybody else. I think that's paramount. And I do think that there's room in terms of, if they have an IEP or, then you know what their learning goals are for PE. And so the assessments really, you can modify the assessments to reflect their IEP learning goals in PE as well. So, and I'm just thinking about it, I don't know your classes, but there are some students who, I know that when I taught that they were in, they came in and they were in an adapted physical education setting, and then they were included as well. So they would have adapted PE one day a week, and then they would be with their same age peers two other days a week. And so, one of the things that I would always do is would work with the adapted physical educator who was working with them in adapted PE and work with that adapted person to kind of modify my assessments. And I don't know if you have the luxury of having a person who's an adaptive physical educator who works with your students. Are they with you just exclusively?
So I'm kind of mixed. So I teach a 611 class.
Okay.
That's its own separate entity. So I have my own class. Sometimes they combine with them. And then I have another adaptive class that's in general physical education. I have two students in there. One girl's in a wheelchair and the other one can't participate fully because I forget what type of a condition she has, but like brittle bone syndrome. So she can't really participate in, like football and right. Like contact sport activities.
Right. So. Well, see, and I think you have to modify the task and modify the assessment, but to allow that student to participate to their fullest in your class. And so I can't remember the second part of your question, like, should they be scored the same?
Yes.
I think you have to modify the assessment to really be able to assess the learning outcomes for that student and what they're capable of, but to always include them and for them to be participating and participate in the assessment. And like I said before, the assessment would be the same assessment, quote unquote, and then utilizing peer and self-assessment, I think would be a really good idea to utilize with all your students. But I think that it's okay to modify assessments. And I think that, you can modify assessments. I had students who struggled with behavior. They weren't on any IEPs, but they struggled with behavior and that impacted them being able to stay on task. And some of that was a management thing, but I actually would work and modify assessments knowing that I was going to struggle to keep them, on task and things like that, because sometimes people, a lot of times people, well, you have to watch that student throw the ball 10 times, which I never did. I would never say I'm going to watch them 10 times because I never could stand and watch from one place 10 times because I was, watching everybody and trying to keep everything moving. But with those students that I had problems with, they had problems managing their behavior. I would modify my rubric for them and be able to change it because I knew I was going to have trouble keeping them on task. So I think that if you think about it beyond students that are on IEPs, all students, and if you can universally design your lessons for all students and universally design your assessments, I think you're going to be a lot more successful.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dr. James.
Yes, indeed.
My goodness, we could be here all day talking about assessment and all this rich information that we're getting here. Brandon, again, part of your toolbox. Got to put that information in there, my friend. Excellent. So, Mia, you have a question for Dr. James.
Hi, my name is Mia Marinakis. I am actually not currently teaching phys ed. I am a grad assistant for the softball team at Canisius, so I'm kind of in the coaching realm right now. My background is actually in special ed, so I'm working my way into the PE world. But in your article, you had mentioned standard-based assessment and how it's not a new idea, and it's widely used in other subjects. So I just wanted to know, like, how PE got so far off track and how it's not being pushed. And even the fact that like how there's some resistance from admin to promote it and use it effectively in the classroom in PE.
That's a great question, Mia. You know, I think that, you know, when I wrote that article, I really liked the idea of saying that a student is meeting the standard or exceeding the standard or approaching the standard. And if you know what the standard is, like if a student knows, they should know what the standard is so they know what they're working towards, and so parents as well. And it hasn't gotten a lot of traction. And I'm not for sure why. I believe that you know, change is hard. I always say nobody likes change but a wet baby. Yeah. And I think that it's really hard for our profession to kind of, you know, shift away. And I think that there's been some pushback because for our profession hasn't wanted to grade on student achievement. There's been issues around well, people are different in PE. People are at different skill levels. So why should we, you know, why should we grade on achievement and things like that? And so with the standards, I thought in my mind, okay, well, we can move away from that. But if you're approaching the standard, but you're not meeting it, then you use those formative assessments and I can work with you as a student and we can work on moving you towards meeting the standard. And so in my mind, it's still based on student achievement, but it's kind of a different way to frame it in terms of it's based on the standards. And are you, and if you're not meeting the standard, what do we need to do to get you to meet the standard? If you're exceeding the standard, what, that's really great. Or if you're meeting the standard, we want to move you to exceeding it. And so I don't really know why as a profession there's been so much resistance to change and so much resistance around grading and assessment. Because I always look at it this way. If I, you know, if in your college classes, if Dr. Seymour said, okay, I want you to study for this test because this stuff I've been trying to teach you is so important, but I'm not going to grade it, but you study because this is important. I mean, how much would you study? He's not going to grade it. And I really think that with students in physical education, since there's so much grading based on managerial aspects, students don't think that it's an important subject. They think there's nothing to learn. And I think that this notion of standards-based grading, it falls in line with that because students, even though we talk to them, we have learning standards, this is what you're supposed to learn, it's still marginalized. It's still like, okay, it's just gym. And so I think that that's part of the reason that just all of the beliefs that are held around physical education and physical education teachers, and that they're marginalized, PE teachers are marginalized, physical education is marginalized. And I just think that that has really made it difficult to move towards looking at standards-based grading, looking at this notion of, are you meeting the standard? Are you exceeding the standard? Are you approaching it? And how we could utilize that, because as you mentioned, other disciplines do standards-based grading. And so I think that it's a great question. And I do not know why we haven't been able to get traction behind this idea. And I've been trying my whole career to move the needle and get people to start to think differently about assessment and get people to start to think beyond those managerial aspects of assessment. And so if you have any ideas, I'm more than willing to listen because I would love for us to move the conversation and move more towards standards-based grading. And then this notion of, well, we have to give a numerical grade. In the article, I give an example of how you could convert, you know, meeting the standards, exceeding the standard, approaching into a numerical grade. So I really think why it's been so difficult to move the needle is just around perceptions and how physical education is viewed as the marginal subject. And it's hard because students you know, students think there's nothing to learn. Parents don't understand. And all we can do is keep advocating and keep pushing the needle, you know, talking to our colleagues, presenting ideas at conferences and trying to get, you know, some traction. But that would be something I would challenge all of you as my colleagues. How do we do that? How do we move the needle and get people engaged more in thinking about assessment and grading in a different way?
Great stuff, Dr. James. And great minds think alike, Mia. You know, it's a question that we had sent to Dr. James in advance about standards-based assessment and instruction. I like to kind of couple those two terms together, standards-based instruction and assessment, because they go hand in hand. And so, you know, just for our listeners, when we're thinking about that, it's a really critical question, because like Mia mentioned, this is not new. And Dr. James writes about this, this idea of using the standards to as a guiding light for our instruction and assessment in PE is not a new concept. And so what we're thinking about with the standards is obviously our state standards and or our national standards. So that's kind of where we're coming from on that. So, you know, and then Dr. James alluded to the fact that at the elementary level, it might not be a big leap. You know, we're in many cases reporting and grades are more in that vein, in that realm of using standards or competencies, benchmarks. It's the question about that at the older age groups that I often get asked as well, that Dr. James alluded to. It's about that numerical quantitative question, you know, and she does, you know, provide Dr. James provides a brilliant way to think about how we can convert that. And instead of, the answer I always provide, again, is changing the culture, but also instead of being behind the curve, why not be ahead of the curve? And let's figure out a way to do so, because that will lead to that meaningful connection for students moving forward. Because, you know, as we're going to get to later today, that assessment as part of the learning process is ultimately where we want to go.
So, I may just add that Dr. James is also modeling what we should be doing. She shared with us, she says, as my colleagues, I would like to hear from you. So we are consistently trying and always trying to improve our craft. And that's a great way of doing that. And the fact that Brandon and Mia thinking about APE students, and that shows the array of students that when we say, and Dr. James alluded to, when she says all students. So that's a great way of presenting this as well. Awesome. Go ahead, Dr. S.
Yeah, so thank you, Dr. Ramsey. So we're getting close to the end here, and we have a question that we've kind of addressed, but it's a different lane a little bit from Khalif. Did I say that right, Khalif? Is that right? Awesome. So Khalif has a question for Dr. James. Khalif, why don't you introduce yourself to the group and to our listeners?
Hi, how you guys doing? My name is Khalif Chaplin. I'm a teaching assistant out here, out in New York, city, Long Island area, at the elementary school level. And I also coach at the middle school level, basketball and track and field as well. So my question was similarly asked, like Dr. Seymour alluded to, but I just wanted to know if you felt that there should be modifications for students who are coming to the country and are English language learners, kind of learning the language for the first time, maybe came from a school where they never had to deal with assessments at all, maybe have no clue what an assessment is. I just wanted to know how you would go about that, dealing with them, helping them feel more comfortable. Would you, you know, want to test to see, can they speak the language at all or something like that first before assessing them, or just any information towards that? Because it's a huge thing out here right now where I am located. We have a lot of students who are coming into the school district who don't speak the language and learning to speak the language for the first time. Mm-hmm. So I just want to know how we should best deal with that.
Well, I think you alluded to it yourself. I mean, in terms of how many languages are spoken in your school?
Mainly English and Spanish, for the most part. Hispanic, most of the
okay. I know that there are schools like in Utica and in other areas, 20, 25. Victor, how many, you know, languages are down there in New York
Mountain
City?
Pot. Yes, indeed, in New York City.
And
yep.
So I think that, I think that it's really important to, definitely try to see how much they understand how much, how well they can speak. And if they can't, I think that, you know, there are some great technology. I mean, there are some apps that you can utilize on your phone to, you know, have a conversation in their language. I think I was thinking you were going to say there was a lot of languages, but, you know, and they'll, you can use pictures, you know, for, to communicate, for assessments. You can actually, there are apps that will translate, you know, if you have written assessments into their language. So I think like the use of technology will really help you with students who are from, who don't speak English as their first language. But I think that you definitely have to make some modifications, and if they've never ever been assessed, you know, and I just think about, you know, helping them understand what an assessment is and helping them to understand why you're doing it. And you might have to utilize some of that technology to communicate with them. Another thing is, you know, not only language, but religion. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but with assessment in terms of individuals who have religious beliefs that might you have to think about with your assessments and how you're going to do the assessment, in terms of maybe in terms of if you have a student who has a traditional dress as part of their religion, which would impede them from maybe participating in a certain way and utilizing an assessment. How are you going to modify the assessment and modify the task to, you know, respect their religious beliefs? And so I look at language in the same way. How do we work to communicate in a way that respects their native language, but also helps them to be successful in the tasks in our classes and feel included and not excluded? And I think that whatever we can do with instruction assessments to make them feel included through the use of technology, through the use of pictures, through the use of, if there's somebody else in their class that speaks the same language but also speaks English fairly well, pair them up, because we want them to feel included in an important part of our class and not excluded in any way because they may be different in some way from other people in the class. And I think that, you know, teaching that idea of inclusion and valuing difference, and communicating that to your class and making that into teachable moments, and that it's, you know, we need to work together to include people. And I've seen this, and it goes back to disability. It goes back to language, religion, sexual orientation. People are excluded in physical education for those reasons. And we need to really move away from that. We need to include people who have different backgrounds and who are different, and modify our instruction and our assessments so that all individuals in our classes learn, they're successful, they have great self-esteem. And when they become adults, they're physically literate and they understand that I have to have a thing. I have to be able to be physically active regardless of, you know, any differences I may have. But that's what we're striving to do, is so that they have the knowledge and skills to be physically active into old age. And so we don't want individuals in our classes to feel excluded for any reason. And so I think that if you approach assessment and instruction from that mindset, that I teach everybody, I teach all students, and I have to do these things, all these different modifications, and utilize technology, utilize different things in my instruction to make them feel successful, to make them feel included, and to make them feel like they're important to me. And it's important to me as their teacher that they become physically literate, and to communicate that, because that's, in my mind, that's the goal of what we do as physical education teachers. But we teach a lot more than physical education. So that's what I would leave you with, Khalif. Thank you for your question.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's a great question, Khalif, and Dr. James, if I would add, just brilliant, and something that, you know, I reference when I'm chatting with our teacher prep candidates or even our professional cert candidates like all of you, is that assessment needs to be inclusive and is part of that culturally responsive conversation, right? And we have to make sure that our assessments are free from bias. Now, you know, Dr. James brought up validity and reliability. If you start to have an assessment that starts to see women doing well and boys not, or vice versa, or, you know, Dr. James alluded to ethnicity and background, and starts to single out those particular variables, then your assessment is problematic. And it's not that the learning is not taking place or something like that. So that's something that I think Dr. James has really spoken well to. And back to Khalif's point, you know, the question that you have to ask, it's layered. You know, you have a student, a child from a different country speaking a different language. Does the assessment need to be altered? Well, of course. But is it namely just, as Brandon pointed out in our chat, is it namely just the language? Because maybe that child is a fantastic mover, and all they need is the assessment to be altered and communicated in a way that they understand it. So that's what we have to kind of discover when it comes to the assessments, that universal, that UDL approach to assessment as well. Representation, expression, and engagement. How do we present the assessment? How do we allow the child to produce or demonstrate their learning? And then how do we engage that child? And if we think of it from that context, Dr. James is spot on. I think we're going in the right direction because we want all children to experience success in PE.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. So as we are wrapping up this session, we have one last question for Dr. James. And again, we can't thank you enough for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us. So we're going to wrap up with this question. Why is assessment crucial to the learning process instead of it being an add-on?
So I don't know if you're familiar with the term instructional alignment, but instructional alignment is when your assessments and your learning activities align with your learning objectives. And research has shown that when you have instructionally aligned lessons and units, that learning is increased quite a bit in any subject, in any discipline. And so if we don't do assessment, we don't have instructional alignment, because instructional alignment by definition is that the assessments and the learning activities align with the learning objectives. So you take the assessment piece out, you don't have any instructional alignment, and you're missing out on all of that learning that can be going on when you instructionally align your lessons and your units. And if it's just an add-on, it's not meaningful. And going back kind of full circle to the AFERD skills test, when I was an undergrad back in the Stone Ages, you know, that's kind of how we learned to do assessment. You teach your unit, you do the skill test at the end. And that is not the way to teach, because assessment should be integrated into the learning process. That's a way for students to, you know, improve their learning, get feedback. And if we embed assessment into the learning process all the way through, students are going to learn so much more. And if it's just an add-on, it's out of context. And going back to like assessing somebody setting a volleyball against the wall, that doesn't tell me how well, you know, they can set up the attack in volleyball. It doesn't tell me how well they can in the context of the game. But if I'm teaching them and I have a drill where it's like a 3v3 where they toss the ball, the first pass has to be a forearm pass, and then it has to be a set, and they get a point for that, and that's my context, but I'm assessing them, that's in the context of the game. And so that assessment is much more meaningful because it gives the student feedback in terms of how they're going to be successful, not only with the skill of the overhead set, but how successful they're going to be in the game of volleyball. And so if you just add it on at the end, it's not meaningful. It does nothing for the learning process. It does nothing to help student learning. It's like checking a box. So yeah, I did an assessment, and it's out of context. And you don't have instructional alignment. I can't emphasize that enough, because that's been, you know, there's lots of research. Cohen, I think, I can't remember the year, wrote about instructional alignment. And there has been lots of research studies that have shown in different disciplines, not just physical education, that learning is increased when you instructionally align your units and your lessons.
Yes, yes. Thank you, indeed. Thank you, Dr. James. As always, we could have been here all day. I just want to make a mention of something very special and dear to me. And I shared it with Dr. James to her surprise today. And I heard that there are people who are will be teachers, future professionals here, people currently teaching. I heard some veteran teachers, novice teachers. So it's an array, you know, of people here. And I presented this book that I read, that Dr. James wrote. And the title is Survive and Thrive as a Physical Educator, Strategies for the First Year and Beyond. So here I am. We are practitioners. I'm beyond, Dr. Seymour beyond, Dr. James beyond. And there is information in here that is so relevant to what we do today that I am able to use with teachers and suggest to teachers. And I was very selfish with this book when I went to meet with teachers in New York City, but I shared it with them and I shared the content of this. So I strongly encourage you to take a look at this book that Dr. James wrote, and it's so well written and the information is like golden. So please reach out and get your copy of this, and I'll put the name in the chat. And Dr. S, you got something to share as well.
I was just going to say, Dr. Ramsey, that, you know, Dr. James has published a bevy of resources and articles and books. And it's just been very helpful to the discipline. She's been a mentor and friend to both you and I. And we always look up to her indeed. And, you know, it just goes to show you that some pieces withstand a test of time. And her writing and her publication certainly speak to that as well. So thank you, Dr. James, indeed. I think we're coming up to a close here. So on behalf of Dr. Ramsey, Dr. James, and all of our passionate New York State AFERD members, we'd also like to thank the graduate students from Canisius, soon to be university, for joining us to share their thoughts and perspectives. This session will be posted on the New York State AFERD website and our podcast channel. Stay tuned for subsequent episodes where we continue with new and exciting topics related to the health and physical education profession. Vic?
Yes, indeed. So please visit us at NewYorkStateAFERD.org, social media handles at New York State AFERD, or call us at 315-823-1015 for more information. And please mark your calendars for our exciting state conference at Turning Stone in Verona, New York, this coming November. And thank you for spending this time with us today.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Great day.
Thank you all. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.